Hi, my name is Andrew, and you're listening to Better Half Chats, a dialogue between a seminary graduate, myself, and my very candid wife, Bethany. Today we're going to be talking about Genesis 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the expanse, and separated the waters that were under the expanse from the waters that were above the expanse. And it was so. And God called the expanse heaven. And there was evening, and there was morning, the second day. And God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, "Let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind on the earth." And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the third day. And God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. And God set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the fourth day. And God said, "Let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens." So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth." And there was evening, and there was morning, the fifth day. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things and beasts of the earth according to their kinds." And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. So today we've come to the topic of creation, which can be a little bit of a controversial subject, depending on, you know, where you've come from, where you've what you've been taught. There's lots of different views about it. So it's a little bit controversial, and it's certainly a scripture that's kind of caused me a lot of, I don't know if distress is the right word, but definitely, like, I've thought a lot about it and just really pored over it and and wondered a lot about it and read a lot about it. So I think what I want to do today is just sort of talk about really primarily what this passage would have meant to the original writers, or to the original writer and to the original hearers of the passage. I think that there's been too many instances of trying to, you know, read it with a modern mind, I guess. And obviously these were ancient people. And so, I think we do ourselves a disservice if we try to think of it, too scientifically. But I do want to kind of look at it through ancient eyes and see what they would have thought about it.
Well, having grown up in the church, I've definitely heard this story a million times, and I've heard it told pretty much one way a million times. And I guess the more I learned about science, and I think this happens to a lot of kids in high school, or even younger, when they start asking questions about science, and then in high school, and then in college especially, things just didn't sit right with me anymore. And when other ideas about this book were presented to me, mainly by you, it didn't, whereas it would be usually unsettling when something that you've believed for so long is kind of shaken. That can be pretty unsettling. For me, it was like really peaceful. It was like, oh, another way to think about this, because my mind's been trying to fit some pieces together that don't seem to fit together for a long time. And being able to make pieces fit is really freeing for me, and it was very peaceful. So it was interesting, because a lot of things, when you hear something your whole life and it's just so, you know, and that's the way it is, and it's ingrained, it can be really earth-rocking for someone to come at it from a different angle. And I think that's what happens to a lot of kids when they go to college, is they start taking science classes, and their professors aren't believers, and things don't fit together, and no one's making sense of it for them, and everyone is telling them, you either believe the Bible or you believe these wacky scientists, you know? Mm-hmm. And then they're like, it just seems to make more sense to believe the scientists, so I guess I have to leave the Bible at home, mm-hmm. you know? And then they're having this like coming of age moment where they're like developing their own sense of who they are. And then all that comes together of like, I guess the Bible's not who I am.
Yeah.
And then it becomes like this whole deal. And I guess it just was freeing for me to be able to be like, I can believe in science and the Bible and be really at peace with that.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you said. And I still remember to this day, when I first started college, I was a geography major, and I was taking one of my classes that I had to take for the core for that major was Intro to Landforms, which is really boring, but basically just, you know, talking about cliffs and, you know, beaches and how different landforms come to be. So obviously when you start talking about geology and the age of the earth, kind of the consensus of the age of the earth is that it's, you know, 4 billion years old. So obviously you have these timescales of millions and millions of years. And so we're talking through these things, and I still remember so vividly, I was sitting on the back row, and there was a person on the very front row that kind of raised their hand, and you could tell that obviously they were a Christian, and at their home church, right, they had been told to, you got to raise your hand and kind of stand up for the Bible when your professors start talking about these things. And the student raised her hand and was like, you know, I don't think the earth is millions of years old. And the teacher just kind of looked at the person and was like, yeah, we're not going to talk about that here. Like, he was like this really deadpan guy. And just, he was like, no, we're just not going to talk about that. Like, I don't want to argue with you, you know? And that moment really stuck with me, because it just showed me like, you know, like this teacher and really most scientists are just kind of following where the path has led them. You know, I don't think, you know, you can talk about, well, maybe they had a kind of a presupposition to start with that led them down a path to believe that the earth is this old, but really, I just don't think so. Like, I just believe that, you know, God gave us minds capable of understanding really complex things. And if he didn't want us to, you know, explore the world and discover that, oh yeah, the earth is 4.3 billion years old or whatever it is. I think that's the latest number. But I just see, like, God gave us minds to be able to figure this kind of stuff out. And if God is, you know, is not wanting us to figure those out, then why did he, one, give us the mind to do that, and two, create the world the way he did, you know? So I don't know. That was a moment that always stuck with me. And I agree. I think for that person who was sitting there in class that day, that was probably really a crisis of faith over time. And I had that crisis of faith. And this issue really weighed heavily on my heart for a long time. And I had to think through it a lot before I came to a point of peace about it.
So where should we start in talking about this passage today?
Well, I think, I don't know, maybe just a quick overview of some of the views that you can have, and kind of talk through those things. You think that's a good idea?
Yeah.
So I guess the way that I was raised and the way that probably many people have been raised and many people still believe is young earth creation, which is basically the view that says that the earth is about 6,000 to 10,000 years old, and that the Bible pretty much literally lays out, like, God created about 10,000 years ago, and then he created all these animals in literal 7 days, and there's some, you know, there's some different views on that too, but you know, that's kind of the view that takes the Bible as literally as possible, kind of word for word, I guess.
Right. I have, like, memories of charts as a child, like memorizing in Sunday school, like memorizing, or Bible study, or vacation Bible school, or whatever, memorizing, like, day one, what was in day one, day two, what was in day two,
mm-hmm.
what do you do on day seven? Rest. You know, like, I remember having to remember, memorize, and recite every day.
Yeah.
That was, like, really important that you knew.
And I think the days are important, but just not in that way, like, not in the way of knowing exactly what order God did it in, and maybe we'll kind of get to that later, but yeah, so that's one view. Another view would be, like, the old earth creation view, which would agree with science that the earth is old, and that also the universe is extremely old too. That view would say that God, you know, kind of directly created. He spoke these things into existence, but just a much longer time ago. And then perhaps he, you know, formed human beings at a later time as well. So that's a little bit different view. And then there's a few other ones, and I think, you know, these can kind of be intermixed, and there's different ideas like the gap theory and day age theory and all these things that you can kind of intermingle with each other, I guess, but. Another view that you might talk about is, you could call it, it's traditionally called theistic evolution, but I know that some people have sort of tried to reframe that as evolutionary creation, so as to make creation the main word in that phrase, instead of evolution, which has come to have a bad connotation to it. But nevertheless, it's still the reigning biological theory that biologists have to use to make any sense of what they study. And so Those are, I mean, that's a very cursory kind of view of the views you can hold. And yeah, like I said, I think they can sort of be intermixed to a point. I mean, young earth creation sort of stands alone in that sense, but the other ones can sort of be intermingled some.
I can remember when I was in, like, I don't know what grade, but I can remember like going to youth group or children's group or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And just like being told how bad evolution is and how you can't believe that we're having to learn that in school and blah, 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 blah. Like, it was evolution versus creation. It was like,
yeah,
creation, there should be a section in the textbook about the differing views and creation being one and evolution being one. And I was like, as a little kid, you're like, I don't believe in evolution, I believe in creation, because that's what all the people tell me, you know?
Yep.
And then you learn about evolution, you're like, what is there not to believe about? It's just the way it, like, how can I not believe it? Like, it,
yeah,
it is. It's like, it is what happened.
Right.
The
problem with
we're
it,
like watching evolution happen like every day.
Yeah.
Like, it's still happening.
Yeah. And the problem with it is that it's been like the theory of evolution has been latched onto by a lot of really famous atheist thinkers, and it's been used as a way to say, well, this is how life could exist, or this is how humans could exist without a god. You know, this is a way it could happen. But the interesting thing is, like, despite everything that we know, still there's not a scientific answer for how life originally began. Like, how did the first, like, DNA molecules form? And there's still no answer for that, which is interesting, but not to say that that means anything, because science may find out how that happened, you know? And so what I've tried to do, because here's what happens. Here's the position you get put in as a Christian if you're told about young earth creation from an early age. Here's the position you get put into. Well, this is the way it happened. Anything else that people tell you how it happened is not true, and so like you said, you're sort of left to deal with these two like separate camps, when really I think it's a false dichotomy. And furthermore, when you try to sort of fit God into these gaps of knowledge, like for instance what I was saying with how life originally started. Like, how did the first living molecules come to exist? What you have when you start trying to fit God into that gap of knowledge, and then that knowledge gets filled in by science, then you're left to expel God from that area. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're left to say, well, there's no place for God there.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would rather do is say, you know what? Whatever process was involved in God creating the world, he's throughout all of it, and he had his hand in all of it. And it doesn't even matter to me that you know, they say, well, evolution happens by chance, and it's really just random mutations and all of this. But really, what is chance? Like, if God mm-hmm. exists, like, can you really even say that there is such a thing as chance? I don't know. You know, I'm not sure about that. Or do we say that, like, God works through chance? I just think that there's a lot of interesting thought that can go into that. And if you really think through it, well, if God exists, then randomness kind of goes out the window a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess we've sort of made our position clear on this already. I'm very much in agreement that we need to come to a place where we can have meaningful dialogue about science, and we can say that, yeah, the theory of evolution is the only thing that it really makes sense, and it's the only way that biologists can even do their work.
So let's take some time and talk about the author of this.
Okay, so yeah, traditionally it's Moses is the author of the first five books of the Bible, and probably the chances are like there was some word of mouth, like this story was probably passed along by word of mouth for a while, and then you know, very possibly Moses is the one that eventually penned it. Or wrote it down, and so, but yeah, so Moses is the author, traditionally, and
like obviously there were no humans alive to eyewitness this,
right?
So
exactly.
even the beginning of the passing down was
right.
Not a person.
Yeah, and obviously,
enlightened idea or thought or.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously Moses is part of the nation of Israel, so he's sort of writing it from the standpoint of being a member of that nation. And interestingly, if you look through this story, there's a lot of places in it where you see that some of these things were written intentionally to counter some of the ideas of the surrounding cultures. For instance, one of the stories of a surrounding culture depicts the world being created out of this violent death or this violent war between gods and stuff like that. And what we see here is obviously a very peaceful picture of a God who's in control, who's it's not chaotic. It's he's placing everything exactly where it's supposed to go, you know. And so there's a lot of evidence to say that this book was written as it's called a polemic, where you're sort of attacking the ideas of a different culture. So that's an interesting tidbit about sort of the reason for it.
Yeah, and I feel like at some point I've heard of this book being compared to like poetry, or where did I get that from? Is that true?
Yeah, it's not exactly poetry per se, but it's not just pure prose either.
It's definitely not like a scientific study.
No, and that's the thing is that, like I was saying before, these people were ancient. You know, they didn't understand the things that we understand. Typically, if they were writing about the beginnings of humanity and the beginnings of the world, they were writing to not to show exactly how it happened, but to show, well, this is our purpose and this is why we came to be, not how.
Right. And they're just showing the nature of God and how God relates to his people and how, I mean, laying down the foundation for like some really deep things in our life that are very true.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily a book for us to like base science off of. It's not like a scientific book.
It's not a scientific textbook. Yeah.
But it is laying down a lot of truth, like the way God creates and the way God relates to his creation and
absolutely
and how things work together.
Yeah, that's the really cool thing is that yeah, you do see something about God in this, and you see that one, he speaks things into existence. Like I think that's a very basic truth of this passage is that God does literally speak things into existence, and I mean that in the sense that we don't know the process that actually brought things into existence, you know, but that whatever that process was,
God wrote that.
Yeah, God started it, and God started it just by speaking words, you know, and so that's a really important point. Another thing is the days. If we go back to the days, an interesting thing you might notice the structure of it is you have 6 days where he's creating things, and the first day and the fourth day match up, and the second day and the fifth day match up, and the third day and the sixth day match up in terms of in the first day he creates like a sort of a canvas or sort of a space, and then on the fourth day he fills that space, right? So let's go back through and look at what it is. So, for instance, the first day he creates light and dark, right?
Yeah.
And then the fourth day, he creates the lights that separate the day from the night, right?
Okay.
So if you look at that, you see there's light and dark, and then he goes and he creates the things that then fill that space. So, and that's true of second and fifth and third and sixth as well. And so what you see is God is creating things to have an order and to have a purpose and these things to fill and expanse. And so there's more to the days than just, mm-hmm. oh, this is the order to which he did it, you know? It's kind of a poetic way of saying, like,
this is the space, and this is what I intended to be in this yeah. space, and how I intended this space to work.
Exactly. So everything has purpose, and everything has order, and it's not chaotic, right? And so that really just opened up a whole world for me when I kind of learned that, you know? Wow, like, how beautiful is that to see? Like, this is more than just God. This is more than just God creating things. He's creating them for something, you know. He's doing all these things, and he's filling the space, and it's just a beautiful image to me.
And he's creating rhythms. I mean,
yeah,
rhythms in the days, rhythms in the way things work together, and then rhythms in work and rest, and rhythms in relationships and
yeah.
interdependence, and it's just kind of all part of this.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think, once again, going back to the idea that these are ancient people trying to figure out why they exist, right? And so this is to show, like, we're not here by accident, you know? We're here because a God who loved us put us here. And then in the end, God says, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, and all these commands that are basically sort of commanding them to be like God, right? They're like, be like me, create things, multiply yourselves, reproduce, you know, be fruitful like I've been fruitful in creating all of these things. And so, yeah, it just really blows my mind when I think about this as a little bit more poetic. Like I said, in the Hebrew, it doesn't have a necessarily poetic structure, but it's definitely not pure prose either, because you see these repeated phrases.
So in conclusion, when talking about Genesis 1, we just want to issue a challenge, and no matter what your views are on creation, evolution, science, religion, we just want to challenge you to spend some time with God in this book with your thoughts and your current beliefs and viewpoints and history, and read the words and just ask God to challenge your current thoughts and to challenge where you are right now. And he'll do that, and you can develop kind of a new a mindset about this, but one that's all yours and not one that is someone else's and works for someone else. But, you know, you really need to come up with something that brings you peace and something that helps you treasure this book without having that conflict in your mind.
Thank you for listening to Better Half Chats. You may remember that this is our last episode of this season where we'll be discussing a particular scripture, but we do plan on doing one more episode for this very first season, but it'll be for a different purpose. We would like to ask you guys to send us any questions you might have. They can be personal questions, they can be questions about an episode from the season, it can really be any question at all. But please feel free to send those questions to us either by email at betterhalfchats@gmail.com or by tweeting us. We are at betterhalfchats on Twitter. So please tweet us questions, email us questions, and we're going to do one last episode for season one that at some point in the future that will just sort of answer these questions. So we'd love to hear from you. We hope that you feel free to ask us questions and you know, ask anything you like. It can be about our family. It can be about anything at all. So we look forward to hearing from you, and we look forward to doing that last episode. And we'll be back for a second season at some point closer to the end of summer or beginning of fall. So we will see you next time.